Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Hey, just a quick heads up. This interview was recorded over the phone during the pandemic and not in our studio.
Okay, Ralphie, you win this time, but we'll be back.
What was it like to shoot the scene where he's dressed like a sheriff and he's got tobacco in his mouth?
The thing in the script says he's chewing tobacco. And so the prop man comes up to me. He's got this pouch and it says Red Man on it. And he rips it open. I swear to God. I said, what do I do with this? He says, jam it down in here.
Oh, no.
About 15 minutes in, the world starts tilting. I start sweating. My stomach starts hurting. And I start throwing up.
Hi, I'm Dan Patrick, and this is IMDb's That Scene, an Amazon original, the podcast where I talk to some of Hollywood's top actors, directors, and producers about some of their most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and have even become fixtures in pop culture. On today's show, we're joined by actor, director, and producer Peter Billingsley. Peter started acting at the age of 2, starring in over 120 commercials throughout the 70s and 80s. At 12, he was quoted as saying, after 100 commercials, you lose count. His role in 1981's Paternity opposite Burt Reynolds earned him a nomination for Best Young Comedian at the Young Artist Awards. In 1983, Peter was cast as Ralphie in A Christmas Story, an iconic role that defined his acting career. A Christmas Story was a sleeper hit, earning over $19 million off a $3 million budget. Over time, though, the film became a holiday classic. And in 2012, it was selected for preservation by the Library of Congress. Today's episode focuses on two iconic scenes. The one where Ralphie finally gets his official Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle with a compass in the stock and this thing that tells time. And the scene where Flick gets his tongue stuck on a pole. What was the audition process like for A Christmas Story?
You know, I became very good friends with Bob Clark, who directed A Christmas Story. And we talked, and he had shared with me that I happened to be the first kid that he had ever seen for that role. He had planned a search, and he had auditioned me, and he said, wow, this guy really seems like he might be the guy. But there's no way I'm going to hire the first person I see. And then he went, I think he saw thousands of boys for the role, and said it just kind of kept gnawing at him that I was the right guy for the role. And then about 3 months later, I got a call to come screen test up in Canada for it. And later found out that he had seen me and thought, oh, this is the guy, but I really got to still go on this search.
When you auditioned, what was the scene that you auditioned for?
I don't remember, but they always pick the worst audition scenes generally. That movie is slightly different because it was pretty subtle. But generally in an audition, and it's such a foreign process, and now having been on the other side, I know how hard it is. They'll pick like the, you know, okay, your husband's just died. Here we go. You're on your knees and action. You know, and it's the screaming, falling down, crying scene. There's no, it's not at all like it is on a set. It's like they just try to throw shit at you to see how you react, I think. Or they'll just say, they'll give you like, it's these three lines. Okay, and I've got a scene 85, and let's just do this chunk. We'll start in the middle and jump in, go. But the screen test that we did when we went up to Canada, they used to do these things where they do these screen tests. So we all go up to Canada, and they have you learn all the other roles. So I had to learn Flick and Schwartz, and probably even one of the bully roles. And then they have 20 kids, and they always try to make it fun and, you know, hey, this is great. Everyone knows there's 20 kids because we're all doing the math. And you're like, all right, there's four roles and 20 kids. So people are going to start going home. And that's what happens. So you circulate. They're trying to find, they call them like chemistry screen tests. You start going through. And one by one, casting director's like, that's great. Thanks so much. All right. Well, we are all done with you for the day. And, you know, they try to spin it like, we'll definitely be in touch. And you know damn well you are a dead man walking. And then we got down to the final group. And then I remember Bob called me back in and said, if you would like the role of Ralphie, it's yours.
Oh, boy. But you're 12 playing a 9-year-old.
That's right. That's really common. A lot of child actors look much younger than they are. And then you get the maturity, you get all the things that come with a 12-year-old, their responsibility a little bit more. It's a big difference, but you still get the youthful look.
Now, when you're reading these scripts and you see, like, you're desperate, you want this BB gun, and then you see that everybody says the same thing, you're going to shoot your eye out. What was it about that scene the first time you read it? And then do you remember what you processed with that?
I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember thinking how genius it is that they tell him the whole movie, and in a typical Disney movie, it would be, of course he didn't shoot his eye out. He was fine. But he nearly, he literally shatters his glasses, and everything they told him came true.
What would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder Carbon Action 200 Range Ball Air Rifle.
No. Shoot your eye out.
Oh, no, it was the classic mother BB gun block. You'll shoot your eye out.
BB guns are dangerous. I don't want anybody shooting his eye out.
You'll shoot your eye out! You'll shoot your eye out!
And what I love about it is, it's not like, and then he makes up a lie, and he sort of cons his mom into some totally different story. It's not like it's kind of messy. It's real. Bob had said later to me that, someone had said, this is really kind of the first portrayal of a dysfunctional family, which became very common, if it was married with children or that kind of different sort of family that also, by the way, felt more real. It wasn't that idealized or Disney or kind of Brady, that perfect wish fulfillment family. The parents are going at each other in their own way. So are the brothers. But it's sort of action always speaks to character. And at the end of the day, the dad does get him the gun. They are there for each other.
Put over there, honey.
Santa Claus probably would.
Oh, it was beautiful. I could hardly wait to try it out.
And it was a tough time, and it was the 40s, and you could tell the money was thin in the house. But there was a lot of love in that home. And at the end of the day, people did the right things for each other. But the mom even lied to the dad when he got into a fight and said, you left your glasses on the radio. There's a lot of that stuff going on, but I think it made it all very real.
How did they shoot that scene where you get your glasses broken?
Oh, my God, I shot my eye out.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Oh, it was in Cleveland. We shot that house. The house is a museum now that we shot in. It's a Christmas story museum. And at the time, it was just the shell of the house. So we used that as the exterior, and then all the interiors were in Canada. So when we were shooting through a window or things like that, sometimes you'd shoot over my shoulder looking out the window. We would have done in Cleveland. And then 2 months later, we'd do the reverse looking from outside in. So it was two different worlds. Mm. That day was freezing cold. I had very thin long johns on under my pajamas, so I was doing all I could just not to shiver, which I think really played in well to the tears, which were probably somewhat genuine, just from sheer frostbite that was going through my hands and toes and the pain in my bones that were freezing. And then I'd run inside, and it was just a shell of a house. It was a quasi-abandoned house. And I had a couple of space heaters that you'd sit in front of, and they'd wrap me a coat, and then they'd change the setup and yell, okay, go, and then I'd run out and do the next shot. But all that stuff was fun, and it was also, kind of longer hours. The child labor laws back then were a little thinner. So it was more Peter works until his mom says he's tired, or he says he's tired, and then he goes home. But otherwise, the clock wasn't as, I think, much as it is these days.
What was it like to shoot the scene where Ralphie is daydreaming of finally owning that Red Ryder BB gun? He's dressed like a sheriff, and he's got tobacco in his mouth.
Well, they totally screwed up, Dan. The scene says he's dressed as a sheriff, so you put the costume on. Little line of thing in the script says he's chewing tobacco, and sure enough, so the prop man is responsible for that. Anything an actor touches is the prop man's department. So he comes up to me. He's got this pouch, and it says Red Man on it, and he rips it open. I swear to God. And he gives it to me. I don't know the difference. I said, what do I do with this? He says, here, just jam it down in here.
Oh, no.
He said, don't swallow, just spit. Okay. So I do it. We get ready to go, and about 15 minutes in, the world starts tilting. I start sweating. My stomach starts hurting. And I start throwing up. And Bob's like, God, what the hell's going on? Goes to Pop and says, oh, I gave him Red Man. You know, he says, what are you doing? He's 12 years old. I didn't know. So we shut down. I go and lay on the couch in the living room of the set for about 40 minutes till I can get this shit out of my system. And then they did what they should have done is someone had a good idea. They took a bunch of raisins, squished them together, and then stuck that in my mouth, and I had brown spit. But in the human, so this was, yeah, it's a very different time, obviously. This gives me straight up whole cut leaf Red Man.
Where is your BB gun?
It's in a vault. It's in a humidified controlled vault, which I kept. They gave me one with a nice plaque on it, and I do have the bunny suit as well.
What is written on the plaque on your BB gun?
It says to Peter Billingsley, something along the lines of thank you for everything. And it was from Bob Clark. And it just, they put it on the stock. And it was one of those ones where they had added like the little compass in to the stock of the gun, which I think was just only in certain models.
What did people ask more about, the red rifle or the bunny outfit?
People ask more about both, but you know, the kind of wild thing about the movie is that people say, you know, that was my family and that is my family. And we still watch it every year for that. It's been wild just to see what the response is to the film and how it's continued just for years and years and years.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. And you start to think back, and I think of the bunny outfit, I think of the leg lamp, and I think of your BB gun. It's a pretty iconic movie moments, memorabilia, though, from just one movie.
I know. And now they sell these leg lamps everywhere, and people dress up for bunny suits for Halloween. It's really gotten into the culture, and it keeps going. And especially at a time, you know, we're just in a time where having things to sustain is just not very common or to stick. So to have something that stuck then and then every decade kind of continues to, there's just obviously a deeper chord that it's hitting.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
In the flagpole scene where Flick has his tongue stuck to the pole there, and you're just watching in amazement, as all the kids were. I love when the kids come to the window inside the schoolroom and you just see this wonderment, like, is this really happening?
Are you kidding? Stick my tongue to that stupid pole, that's dumb.
That scar should know it'll stick.
You're full of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
like double dog dare ya.
Now it was serious. A double dog dare. What else was left but a triple dare you? And finally, the coup de grace of all dares, the sinister triple dog dare.
I triple dog dare you!
Schwartz created a slight breach of etiquette by skipping the triple dare and going right for the throat.
All right, all right.
Has anyone seen Flick?
You knew what was happening, but to play that wonderment in that moment, you know, what kind of encompasses that?
So much of good comedy is reactions, right? So that pole was sort of plastic and then painted to look metal. It was a completely fake pole. He poked, this is, you know, the special effects budget I'm revealing now. He poked a hole in it right on the side and put the camera looking sideways so you couldn't see that hole. Then he had a tube that connected to that hole that sucked air inward. So it was sort of an actual effect. So when he put his tongue on it, it looked like he was genuinely stuck. And when he pulled his head back, he couldn't really pull back because it was stuck in that hole that was sucking air in. So again, it made it fairly easy to react to. And it was bitterly cold. That was in Canada. And that day we got almost no snow during the whole movie. 90% of that was brought in with snow plows from the mountains or blowing foam. Like a shaving cream, which again, you probably could not do today. I don't know what was in the shaving cream, but probably. I think the EPA might have something to say about it. That it was a bitterly cold day. So, you know, when it's like, hey, we got to get back to class, like, yeah, we got to get the hell off the set. It's freaking freezing. So we just want to run away.
How long did the flagpole scene take?
That was probably a full day. I think I asked them afterwards how much what the shooting schedule was. It was like in the 40 odd days, which is a lot of days. Like now a movie that was that size would be probably 25 or 30 days. So to have that many days, you know, again, he was just smart. He knew he wanted to take his time and get the detail of it. And that's why, as you're commenting, you're like, exactly, it's all the reactions. It's just the perfect moments, and he had the time to execute it.
Why was Flick the person chosen to have his tongue stuck?
That whole movie is an adaptation of a series of short stories and orally told stories that Gene Shepard did. Are you familiar with Gene? You know Gene's work in history?
Wasn't it in God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash?
All Others Pay Cash.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love the title.
And the BB gun. And I mean, Gene was you. He was a big radio guy.
Yeah.
So he'd, you know, go get up in the morning and go and do his radio show. And he would tell these stories of growing up. And he kind of would create this sort of fictitious family of the Parker family that was loosely based on his experiences. And he'd create a whole host of other characters that were inspired by the things that he saw that was very kind of Midwestern. So this was, you know, very much the folklore of the time of, you know, something you don't do. And just that classic daring kid, you know, to do things that you're not supposed to do and testing the boundaries. That movie is very kind of mythically coming of age. It's like going into adulthood, you know, all those sorts of rites of passage that you move through, which is, I think, also why it resonates, because it's very mythic in nature. You know, Ralphie's encountering, you know, he has to stand up to and through violence, you know, overcome a bully. And, you know, there's a will and a desire to push through things, and so many of the things that are happening to him around him, there's pornography in the house. You know, all those things that are sort of exposure to sexuality, you know, on a deeper level, as you look at it, you sort of realize, oh yeah, it's kind of this sort of very cool, mythically rite of passage movie that a little boy moves into sort of his teenage years.
But what is it like to have a moment when you're 12 years of age that you don't know if you'll ever achieve again as an actor?
Okay, well, it was good because it was a slow burn. I agree with you. When the movie came out, it was like, kind of successful, but not really successful at the box office. In fact, they pulled it before Christmas. So it wasn't this, you know, you wake up the next day and everyone knows your face.
Wait, it didn't air at Christmas time?
No, it was pulled. It came out before Thanksgiving, and then the studio pulled it, I think, 1 or 2 weeks before Christmas, for whatever reason, which is insane for a Christmas movie.
Wow.
And it was doing okay. It wasn't a world beater, but it was doing well. And Bob was pretty pissed about it after all that effort and work and put into a good movie. So it received a fairly decent critical reception, but not that much box office. Back then in 83, you know, it's like, okay, that's it. But video and cable were just really kind of catching on. And as a result of that, it was a title that really benefited from it. And so as a seasonal, like the next year, you'd sort of start to see it. And then I'd see in a video store, like an end cap with Christmas Story and all the VHS tapes back then. Like, oh, wow, this thing's really kind of showing some life, you know, eventually after this 24-hour marathon, which I had nothing to do with, by the way. It just took off.
Peter, thanks for taking time to reminisce, and thanks for joining us. We'll be watching A Christmas Story over the holidays, and hopefully we'll talk
soon.
Thank
you for the research, Dan. It's very impressive.
I didn't do homework in high school, so I figured now's the time to start doing homework. New episodes of IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick are available exclusively on Amazon Music. Please make sure to follow us in the Amazon Music app to get every episode. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick was created, hosted, and produced by me, Dan Patrick. It's also produced by Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody, and executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood for Workhouse Media. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick is a production of Dan Patrick Productions and IMDb in association with Workhouse Media.
Hey, Prime members, You can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.